From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. We're going to have a lengthy conversation with Gabe DeArmond. He's the publisher of PowerMizzou.com, the Missouri rival sites, and one of our good friends in the network. We'll spend a little over a half hour with Gabe, so I'll take up a good bit of show. We'll talk Missouri basketball, Missouri football. We'll ask him about some different aspects of the Ole Miss athletics programs as well during our interview. He's going to insult college baseball. I'm not going to yell at him. We're going to have a good time with Gabe here in a bit. So before we do that, we'll tell you the podcast is brought to you every single morning by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Remember, Blue Sky and Craddock Oil, the presenting sponsors of the FCA Breakfast, the annual breakfast on Ole Miss's campus. It's going to be February 24th. You can get tickets at the Ole Miss FCA website. I think it's olemissfca.com. And Evan Ingram is going to be the featured speaker, featured guest for that morning. Always a well-run event. And we'll be again now, too. So get your tickets and be in town for that day. Ole Miss plays Tulane, I think, in baseball that weekend, so you can double dip and make a full day of it there on the Ole Miss campus. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. And then it's up to you. You're going to get a great quote on a great new Ford, and then it's up to you. You can shop that quote around, or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast. And let's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. The end of your deal, you're going to make it even better. Tell Corey that you heard about it on you heard about the dealership on the podcast. Mention any of our podcasts. It's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Give me 5 seconds for people that don't have ESPN 8 to see our show today. The European Tour is in Perth, Australia.
Yes.
Lee Westwood this morning as he gets to the course. This was waiting on him.
Oh, no. See, I'm done. At that point, I'm good.
He calls it a brown mooch. It is a very, very large snake of some sort.
I would say I'm no longer playing in this here tournament. I'm out.
He said he's going to take a coffee break. He says here, I don't know if he actually knows what he's talking about. His hashtag is fourth deadliest. So is it actually a venomous snake?
They're all venomous, deadly snakes.
They're all number one deadliest.
Damn right.
Cobras. It is not a cobra. I can see it.
It looks like a cobra to me.
Snake, cobra.
I've been very clear on this.
You have.
I have been consistent. If I see a snake, it is a cobra.
Little bit of news yesterday. Ole Miss picks up a commit from a 4-star wide receiver, Miles Battle. He Arkansas, Oregon, I think, were the fellow finalists. The Ducks, I think, thought they had him most of yesterday. He commits to Ole Miss last night in a pretty well-done video. His little commitment video was good, kind of showed him in peewee ball, high school ball, and then went into the NWO thing. You and I talked about this. We've discussed Ole Miss's lack of linebacker signees for years. That is incredibly puzzling because they do well at most other positions, and they have become a preeminent force in wide receiver recruiting over the last few years, going back to, I guess, Treadwell really was what kicked that off a little bit. But they, even with all the situations, not having a hard time to find guys for Matt Corral to throw the ball to.
It's bizarre, really. I mean, first of all, kudos to Ole Miss for landing the wide receiver. Yeah.
Because the same day they lose the kid to Iowa at linebacker.
It's bizarre to me. You can land in this class, what do they have, like 7 4-star wide receivers in it? I mean, it's bizarre, and that's good. I mean, good. I mean,
they do a great job recruiting offensive linemen and wide receivers and quarterbacks. Yeah.
And for the love of God, they can't land a linebacker to save them. And I know they have some linebackers. I'm being hyperbolic. Chill.
We're talking about blue chip linebackers.
But you're in on this linebacker that a lot of people want.
And running backs.
Yeah, but in this case, the McDonald kid.
Yeah.
And you lose him to Iowa. Now, I made people mad with this yesterday, and so let me clarify.
What are you talking about?
People launched into immediately with, it's cold there. I don't think weather is a... There's no sign at all that weather is a major factor in recruiting. None. Now, you don't see kids from the South with SEC offers often end up at places like Iowa. I don't know. I've never been to Iowa. It's one of the places I kind of want to go because I watch their games on TV because of when they play. And I love their little tradition with the Children's Hospital. It's cool.
Can it be a tradition after 1 year?
It's going to be.
Yeah.
They started one. So, yeah, it's a tradition. They do it every game.
It's kind of a stickler semantics. Go ahead.
10 years from now, it'll probably be a tradition.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not stopping.
No,
go ahead.
It's great.
It's great.
Yeah, everyone benefits from it. I've never been there. I've never been to Iowa City. I don't know what it's like. I don't know how big it is. I pulled up the two. I said yesterday that Ole Miss and Iowa are very similar programs. And after researching it, I stand by that. Very similar programs. Sort of middle of the pack in their league if you were to do a ranking on where's the Iowa job in the Big Ten. And middle. Where's the Ole Miss job in the SEC? Middle. Middle.
Yeah. Programs that can be consistent and can pop up and bite you over a year or two period depending on what's going on.
Yeah, Ole Miss went to the Sugar Bowl a couple years ago. Iowa went to the Rose.
Yeah.
Kirk Ferentz has been there since 1999.
Is it really that long?
Been that long. Very stable. Steady.
Gets a raise every time he has a winning season.
Yeah. Kudos to Kirk Ferentz.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, when you sign with Iowa, you kind of know what you're going to get. You're probably going to go bowling most years. They produce NFL players. Their average ACT score of students enrolling is just slightly better than Ole Miss's average ACT, about 1 point. If you have a 28 on the ACT, you literally fall in the same percentile at Iowa that you do at Ole Miss. That's what I found out yesterday. I pulled up stuff about the University of Iowa. Tuition costs at Ole Miss and Iowa are very similar. So, you know, was it shocking that a kid would choose Iowa over Ole Miss? No, because if you're evaluating the two programs, there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, that's what I told you. The only thing that shocks me a little bit is typically SEC programs don't lose kids out of Georgia to Big Ten schools.
Right. No, it's true.
For whatever reason.
But I don't know what was going on in his recruiting or whatever. But for whatever reason, Ole Miss can't finish the deal on big-time linebackers.
Some of it is chicken or the egg. You got to get some to get some.
Yeah.
Some of it.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Beyond that, it's weird. I don't know.
It's no longer an anomaly. If I'm an opposing school and Ole Miss is in on against me on a big-time wide receiver, I'm worried. Like, those sons of guns, they get them.
And they're going to have dudes catch the ball.
I mean, you know, they've developed quite a reputation as a school that produces wide receivers, as a school that produces quarterbacks, as a school that produces offensive tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much about linebackers.
No, and running backs.
Or running backs. Produced one hell of a linebacker in Patrick Willis, but it's been a while. As the kids say, it's been a minute.
Been a minute.
Produced Dexter McCluster, but induced McAllister, but again,
been a minute. Ben Jarvis. I know they didn't recruit him, but he was on the roster.
Yeah. Kids aren't into that.
Well, and I mean, you know, LSU has this problem at quarterback. I mean, it's everywhere, and based on your offense, when you're a school that, I don't know what your stats say or don't say, but just in general, when your stats say that we're going to throw the crap out of it, and we're known as a throwing wide receiver quarterback gunslinging group, the tailback looks at it and goes, hey, where's the ball going here, bud?
I mean, yeah, well, the other schools say you'll never get the ball there.
Yeah, they go, hey, A.J. Brown's the face of their program, bud.
Yeah. And he is.
He is.
I mean, that's not an untrue statement. You know, I mean, if you
he would win a lot of popularity contests on campus.
You're recruiting, yeah, he would. If you're recruiting linebackers or quarterbacks at LSU, the other schools are going to say, please tell me the last quarterback they produced that was any good.
Yeah. Jamarcus Russell.
I mean, you know, Jamarcus, Burt Jones. Kids go, Burt who?
Burt Jones.
I mean, I don't know. Jamarcus Russell, that's it. And Jamarcus, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's what have you done in the last 2 or 3 years? These kids, this is a different Instagram. Insta is short for instant. Instantaneous. They're not interested in what you did 4 years ago. So it's, for whatever reason, Ole Miss can't land a linebacker. And they can sign a gazillion wide receivers. But again, I'm going to be consistent on this before anybody goes crazy. This class was about survival. They did more than survive. They're going to finish top 25. Top 30?
Yeah, it's 30-ish is going to be kind of the closing.
I'm going to stay consistent. It's a solid class. They could have easily collapsed and had an Arkansas class. They didn't. They're okay. Now, you can't do this 5 years in a row. If you do, you won't win. It won't work in this league. You have to sign elite players to win, period. It's been established. But they've put themselves in position to go for it in 2019. And the 2019 class is the conversation that we're having a year from now, God willing, is the one that will tell the tale on the decision to hire Matt Luke, the decision to not go through with Dave Doran, all of that stuff. Whether it was good or bad, we'll know in a year.
Little bit of local just for people that might have an interest. The Perfect Game Top 50 High School Rankings came out for baseball yesterday. Hattiesburg is number 8 in the nation, headlined obviously by Joe Gray, the Ole Miss commit that we'll have a decision to make here in a few months this summer. Number 1, if you're curious, American Heritage out of Plantation, Florida. Number 2, Parkview, Georgia. I believe that's Will Etheridge's alma mater, if I have that correctly off the top of my head. Bishop Gorman in Nevada appears to be good at everything. They're in the top 5 in baseball as well.
Yeah.
Cypress Ranch in Texas probably has a right-hander that throws pretty hard, if I had to guess, just from Texas. Baseball, Lake Charles, Louisiana with Barb is in there at 9. Ole Miss had some kids from there. Anyway, getting to the point, Oxford at 24. So Oxford with some kids there at 24, headlined, I assume, by Drew Bianco. That's that. And let's see. I'm just kind of going down the list, see if anything else sticks out. I think DeSoto Central might be somewhere in here as well, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Either way. Anyway, Hattiesburg and Oxford both in the top 25, though. What?
Just resisting the urge to tweak a little. I was going to ask where Drew Bianco is going to school. Sorry.
You just curious?
I just couldn't remember.
You answered it on the message board, Neil. Bald or fat?
I'd rather be bald and fairly in shape than fat.
So you'd rather be current than what you are rather than 20 pounds heavier and have hair?
Yes.
Would you?
Yes. Okay. I've accepted the baldness. It is what it is.
Japanese researchers have found a way to grow hair in a lab using some sort of chemical in a McDonald's grease. We see on the internet this morning.
I mean, now, if all I have to do is take that grease and, like, rub it all over my head to grow hair, I'm in.
But you have to eat the McDonald's french fries three times a day. If you have to ingest it.
But I wouldn't be just 20 pounds overweight. I'd be 100.
Don't they put sugar on their french fries?
Bound to.
Isn't that right? To make, yes. make you want to keep eating them?
Make them addictive?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right.
I
think they put sugar on them. Anyway. But, yeah, Ole Miss loses the kid to Iowa, gets Miles Battle yesterday, and then Missouri tonight is kind of the main things. From a news standpoint, I think our next media op with Mike Bianco is tomorrow, so we'll update some different things there as well. Story on Tim Rowe up on the site. We've got a lot of recruiting analysis videos also on Miles Battle. I got an email from one of our bosses last night telling us that was coming. So you can check that stuff out at rebelgrove.com. And Neil, I would assume you're probably more focused on attendance than actual game action tonight.
Yeah, I want to see what the crowd is tonight. It's a Tuesday night. It's an 8 o'clock tip. I just saw where Oxford was supposed to play, I think, Madison Central in a soccer game here in Oxford, a playoff soccer game that's been suspended because of inclement weather that is expected tonight. In OHS boys soccer, we're supposed to play a playoff game with Madison Central. It'll be played tomorrow instead. I'm concerned there won't be a lot. Not concerned. That's not the right word. I sense there won't be many people there tonight. It's always been.
Is that a fair representation given the time and the weather?
Fair? Probably not.
But optics are optics.
Optics are optics, and if you're the other side, if you're the people at Ole Miss that are charged to make this decision, you have to ask yourself, if we change nothing but the record on this team, would people come? Ole Miss is 4-6 in the league. If they were 6-4 in the league, how many people would go to the game as opposed to how many will be there tonight? I don't know the answer to that. It's not my job. Again, this is, I have said all along, it's not my decision to make. No one's going to consult me about this. Not my call. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to be the one that extends Andy Kennedy or the one that fires Andy Kennedy. Not my call.
Andy Kennedy yesterday added a little more to his comment and the quote in Knoxville on Saturday, saying that he was just trying to compliment Tennessee and that was all there was to it. Right?
That's what he said.
Okay.
In the end,
doesn't matter.
That part is much ado about nothing. Yes. It was frustration on his part. Again, like I wrote in 10 Thoughts, probably not the greatest look in the world, but
I'm telling you, I'm surprised more comments aren't made from coaches after games, because it's not a very long cooling off period after some days that are potentially devastating to your career. And you got to go in there and talk about it and explain it. Still being fairly hot most times.
Yeah, you come right in, you just talk
I'm a little surprised a lot of times that there's not more blow-ups.
10, 15 minutes after you lose by 33, you go in and you look at your kids and look for Ole Miss, man. I mean, it's like a road. I mean, there's no beating around the bush here. This is a disappointing season that has the potential to spiral out of control.
Win tonight and get back to treading water, go whatever. Yeah.
If you win tonight, you're 5-6, and you go down to LSU where maybe you pull one off, and then you're having a different conversation. Lose tonight, you're 4-7. You go down to LSU where they've played well at home lately, and all of a sudden you're 4-8. You come home, and then who's here for the Arkansas game Tuesday night at 6:00? I don't know. And then you got to go to State, and you know State wants to beat Ole Miss. It's been a minute since State beat Ole Miss in basketball. You know they're going to be geeked up for it. I mean, if you're State, it's a very easy marketing tool for them to fill up that arena next Saturday night. Tell them that it's a girls' game. It'll be packed.
10 and change last night for State and Carolina, the largest Humphrey Coliseum crowd ever for women's basketball.
It reminds me so much of when I was a kid growing up in Ruston. It really does. It is like reliving childhood.
I'm not making fun at all.
God, I am. Women's basketball is horrible.
Well, yeah, it's not what I'm saying. It's just it's been strange to watch the...
Shoot me, I don't care.
The movement, I guess, is the point.
He's apparently done a great job marketing.
He has.
That's a weird beat in that everyone on that beat feels pressured to do that all the time.
The men have sucked.
The men have been bad. And it gets cultish, women's basketball. It does. It does. It appeals to old people. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm not. Go ahead.
When I was growing up in Ruston.
I'm stopping you.
When I was growing up in Ruston, the Lady Texters,
yeah.
Louisiana Tech's women's team, they were an elite national women's basketball program.
They were.
I can remember vividly, I've used this story before, going to a doubleheader at Thomas Assembly Center on the campus at Louisiana Tech. And the men's game was the early game. They played at 5. The men tipped at 5. The men's team had a power forward named Malone. They were pretty good. In fact, they were ranked 8th in the country. And yet the crowd was about 4,000. They got out of there and then they filled it up for the women's game against what is now ULM. It was then NLU. At the time, they were pretty good too.
With a reputable national men's team, though. Not like the men were terrible and it was just a...
No, they had a power forward named Malone.
Yeah, I'm aware.
His first name was Carl, I believe, yeah. Spelled with a K.
He delivered the mail.
He went on and played in the association for a year or two. Played for a minute.
A minute.
And the people in Ruston that went to the games were the old people. And that was their thing.
It's simply because they're winning. It has nothing to do with the product on the floor.
It can't.
I'm sure they like the kids. I'm sure that they've marketed several of the kids to where people sort of have a personal attachment to them. But you take the two, and this has nothing to do with Ole Miss. This is in general. Softball is a much more aesthetically watchable game than women's basketball.
On two levels.
It's fast.
And the girls are pretty. I need to stop.
Keep going too long, I'm going to ask you about road conditions in your neighborhood and things. So, I mean, you, but no, it's speed of game. It's pretty good defense, and it's speed of game.
Yep.
No, and you're right on your point too. But even that's not the only.
No,
criteria,
no, it's
though.
Not the only criteria. If look, the Ole Miss softball team has a number of girls that are really easy to look at. They're also very good players. If they were bad players and the team sucked, nobody would go watch them play other than their families.
Because they've had that situation before.
That's right. I'm right. I know I'm not being politically correct right now, but I'm right. I don't want to be politically correct. Screw it. I mean, it's true. The girl, the pitcher, I can't always forget
Caitlin Lee.
Caitlin Lee. She's really good. She's fun to watch. She's real energetic, all that stuff. She's a pretty girl. Is it bad for me to say that? I'm not hitting on her.
No.
She's an attractive girl. She's easy to watch, but it's not. But she can.
Now you're about the least threatening 47-year-old a girl could have at night at 21.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm no. But it's true. But if she were out there, the exact same girl, and she couldn't pitch, and she was horrible, and LSU was beating her 42-1, nobody's out there going, "Hey, you know, isn't she fun to watch?" No, she's good. She gets strikeouts and she gets pumped up and her teammates get excited and the games, they play 7 innings in an hour and 45 minutes and you're in and out of there.
Yeah.
So it is aesthetically pleasing. Women's basketball, I'm sorry, is not an aesthetically pleasing product. Yell at me all you want. I watch the NBA a lot. I think the NBA is aesthetically pleasing. The college game, the men's college game, in my opinion, because of the way that it is officiated, can be very difficult to watch because it gets
flow is interrupted all the time.
It gets bogged down.
Yeah.
Women's basketball, for me, is unwatchable. The game is played below the rim. The disparity in talent is stunning. It's what it is.
We're going to kick puppies after the break. Before we do that, we'll tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 or MasterCutsLawn.com for a free quote. Whether you're building your pergola, your arbor, your deck, your stone patio, or an outdoor living area, MasterCuts will take care of you. And if you'd like to just get some landscaping done, they'll give you a free cut when you mention the podcast and sign an annual contract. So again, MasterCutsLawn.com, 662-607-7773.
Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. Might be a good thing for me after the day that I've had so far. Did you know that State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies if you own a rental property. Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a call, go to Google, read the reviews for Romero Miller State Farm, and then call Romero Miller State Farm for your insurance needs in Mississippi and Tennessee, 662-893-1212. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Ben Brown's going to join us on the podcast on Thursday for a few minutes to tell you about a little bit more about Journey Business Solutions. But for now, let me tell you that if you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application with rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or Oxford, 662-281-8800.
Now we'll go to Gabe DeArmon of PowerMizzou.com on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Gabe, welcome into the show again. Thanks for spending some time with us here on a Tuesday morning. Missouri and Ole Miss tonight at 8 o'clock at the Pavilion at Ole Miss. I guess kind of your thoughts on – I mean, Ole Miss is 11-12. They're 4-6. Basically, yeah. We're in that limbo where you're kind of waiting for things to either get bad enough where you can ask the questions or for things to correct themselves. Missouri, meanwhile, I mean they're in the mix. They're in the race. They're playing better. They just beat Kentucky. Yeah. Kind of what's the storyline around that team right now?
Well, this has been such a kind of a roller coaster ride over the last few months. I mean, we all knew coming into this year, basically the storyline was, hey, no matter what happens, at least it's much better than it's been, right? I mean, this program is headed back the right direction. There's hope that they've hired a guy that knows what he's doing, all that. And then, you know, I mean, coming into the year, I told these people they were out over their skis, but there were Missouri fans who had like legitimate, oh my God, we're maybe going to make our first Final Four ever hopes. That was a little ridiculous, but obviously the optimism was high. I mean, coming into this season, you said if Missouri doesn't make the NCAA tournament, this year's a pretty big disappointment. Well, then Michael Porter plays all of 2 minutes, and all of a sudden you're going, I don't see how this team makes the NCAA tournament now. And then they played pretty well. They were 10-2 going into the Illinois game, and you know, Konzo Martin, I thought, had done a fantastic job without Porter. And then for a few weeks, they just kind of treaded water. You know, I mean, they'd win a game, and then they'd come out and not look very good. They never lost two in a row, but they never really put any sort of a winning streak together. And I think when they lost three in a row. They lost to A&M, then Auburn ran them off the court here in Columbia, and then they lost at Mississippi State. And at that point, everybody kind of said, boy, these guys have done a really good job. Konzo's done a nice job, but they've only really got six players, and it's all kind of caught up with them, and this probably isn't a tournament team. And then they turn around and win at Alabama and beat Kentucky at home. And now everybody's back on the, okay, this is a tournament team, how far can they go train? I mean, it's really been kind of up and down, but I think the overriding thing is Missouri fans are just excited to care again.
How many times a day are you asked about Michael Porter?
It's slowed down a little bit, but it's going to pick back up again because now it's getting near the point where people think he's going to come back soon. So, I mean, I would say, I don't know, on average, maybe three or four times a day.
I'll ask.
I get made fun of because of my attitude toward the whole thing. I actually, I don't know if you can curse on this podcast or
sure,
not.
Sure, go
so
for
I
it.
I won't do it, but okay, then I'll do it. So somebody had, I mean, there are so many rumors about this kid, you know, and the truth is we've said for a long time, nobody knows outside of his family. Nobody knows. And that includes like Missouri basketball. I don't even know if Mike knows when he might be able to come back, but the truth is nobody outside that family right now has any idea. So, somebody, Adam Zagoria, had written a story like, sources say this story about Porter is wrong, you know, and somebody had direct messaged me that story, and I meant to reply in a direct message, but it obviously went out as a public tweet, and my tweet was, I hate this shit, and people make fun of me, but it's true. I'm tired of it. Like, I've said for a long time, I'm covering the team who's going to play. Like, I understand why fans care about Michael Porter and why it's a big deal. And God love the kid. He helped out our business a lot and all that. But at this point, my job is to cover the kids who actually play in the games. And I'm so tired of the game being over and this huge win for Missouri, like at Alabama next week. And like within 2 minutes, okay, is Mike going to play the next game? It's just beyond the point of all rational thought.
Is there any chance he comes back?
Yeah, I do. That's the thing. There is a chance. So we get to deal with it. I mean, because the thing is, this injury, the surgery he had, I mean, the statement said he's likely out for the season. It's a 3 to 4 month recovery time. Well, a simple Google search will tell you that generally this is not a 3 to 4 month recovery time. Generally, this is like a 6 to 8 week recovery time for athletes. And then the kid inflamed the whole thing. Like within days of this surgery, he posted, like, Michael Porter Instagram stories are like this whole new thing. I didn't even used to know what an Instagram story was. My 15-year-old had to teach me that that was different than actual Instagram. But now I know them because Michael Porter posts one, and it is immediately a viral sensation among Missouri fans. But he posts within days of this surgery. Whoever said 3 to 4 months recovery time was lying. Well, it's like, well, the team said it, and your family said it, you know, so – everybody immediately thinks, I mean, this is how bad it's gotten. There's some new pair of Jordans that are coming out on February 17th, I think. So the other day, he posts a picture of these shoes on Instagram, and it says February 17th with, like, the eyes emoji. And immediately on Twitter and our message board, people are going, is he coming back February 17th? It's like, well, no, these shoes are coming out February 17th, but please let's make a career out of parsing this kid's Instagram post. all you can do is laugh. It's amazing. And again, like, it's great that people care this much, and I get why they care about him, but it has reached a point of utter ridiculousness.
Okay. At the risk of you getting mad at me, I'm going to ask this question because I'm just curious.
No,
there's NBA people that joke about this. He could have been a lottery pick if he could have gone straight to the NBA from high school.
Yes.
He's going to be a lottery.
Maybe number one.
Yeah, maybe the top pick. He's going to be a lottery pick now. Is there any chance at all in your mind that there was a conspiracy here that he was never going to play, that this was always kind of pre-planned, that he wasn't going to risk getting hurt?
I don't think so. But I do understand why the question comes. I mean, I'd be lying if I said it hadn't crossed my mind. But the reason I don't think so is, like, why would that be the case? It's not the case with anybody else. DeAndre Ayton was always going to be a lottery pick. He's playing. Marvin Bagley is always going to be a lottery pick. He's playing. The one thing that I think is most frustrating to Missouri fans is, and Mike said this, like, he did the injury that eventually was fixed by surgery happened 2 years ago. Had he done this his junior year in high school, or frankly, had he done it immediately after his senior season, when he goes to Nathan Hale and they go undefeated and all that, and he's the number one player according to everybody in America, if he had surgery the day after that game, like, everything's fine. He plays here. Day one. The frustrating part to fans and honestly to people who follow it is, why was it the day of the first game this suddenly got to, why was that the day? I mean, that's what creates the conspiracy theory.
Sure.
I mean, he played all three exhibition games, and then just all of a sudden that day was the day that I understand the questions. I mean, I don't want to be so cynical as to believe that the answer is yes, but I do understand why people think that.
This team without him, if they don't have him, you've seen them a lot. How far can they go?
I think they're a tournament team. I mean, they're good enough to be in the top four of the SEC because I think outside of Vanderbilt, I think legitimately everybody is good enough to be in the top four of the SEC. This is one of the most interesting leagues I've ever covered. I mean, it's not going to shock any of us if, like, number 8's playing number 12 in the conference title game. because they're that close on any given night. So I think this is a tournament team without Porter. The ceiling just isn't really there. I mean, without him, I don't see them possibly being good enough to put together four straight games in March. If he were to come back, like, I think then they become one of those teams that nobody's necessarily going to pick them to go to a Final Four, but kind of like South Carolina last year, where you could see them being good enough to just catch fire at the right time. The ceiling with him is playing for everything. The ceiling without him is in the tournament and maybe make the second weekend.
Tournament's going to be in St. Louis. I like St. Louis. It's a cool, cool town, except for the baseball team. But it's a neat arena. All that stuff. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like there, as opposed to Nashville, where frankly it works in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, like, I love it in St. Louis because I can drive back and forth to it. And you know, those of us who do this for a living are selfish and crabby, and really we only want what's convenient for us.
Yeah.
As Missouri fans know, every time a game starts any later than like 11 a.m., I'm pissed off about it.
Us too. Yeah.
Like you said, this thing works in Nashville. Like, I like the SEC tournament in Nashville. I think the SEC tournament should be in Nashville. I mean, that's fine. The SEC gave the state of Missouri and Mizzou a nod and moved it to St. Louis for a year. I don't think it's going to be the same. I don't know what the atmosphere will be like. I mean, I can tell you this, the SEC is thanking its lucky stars that Missouri has made a comeback and that they have a Missouri team to care about in this tournament. And I can also guarantee you that if anyone in the SEC offices were given truth serum, they are praying it is Missouri and Kentucky in the tournament final.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, how will it be? I think it'll be okay, but this event, like, it's important to Nashville. I don't know that this event will be important to St. Louis.
Yeah, it makes sense. It is. Nashville takes – they embrace it. It just fits there.
And Nashville's a great town. St. Louis is a fun town, too. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoy Nashville. But so that week is really fun. I say that week. I've never had any reason to be there for more than 2 days thus far, so I'm looking forward to an SEC tournament that I actually maybe stick around for the whole thing. But that's a fun event down there. It's kind of like, you know, growing up, they had the Big 8 and Big 12 tournaments in Kansas City, and it always worked. And then they moved it a few times to Dallas and Oklahoma City, and I went, and I'm like, it's just like something is kind of going on here. It's not like this is what – I mean, Big 12 tournament week, that's what Kansas City is geared around. When you put it in Dallas, it's like, oh, hey, I heard there's this thing going on over there. Maybe we'll go check it out.
Your boy Barry Odom hires Derek Dooley to be the offensive coordinator. I think you wanted to hire Hugh Freeze. I think Nick Saban wanted to hire Hugh Freeze.
Jeremy Pruitt wanted to hire Hugh Freeze.
Jeremy Pruitt wanted to hire Hugh Freeze. Some people say even Ed Orgeron wanted to hire Hugh Freeze, which I'm not really sure on the last one. Yeah, I'm kind of What can you enlighten us on as it pertains to Freeze, and then what has been the reaction to Dooley?
Well, there certainly were people at Missouri, most notably, like you said, involved in the football program, who would have liked to hire Hugh Freeze. It became pretty apparent pretty early on that wasn't going to happen. I'm not sure if it was like – I don't think it was mandated by the SEC – but especially now that it didn't happen at Alabama, didn't happen at Tennessee, I think there was certainly we can't tell you not to do it, but we can tell you we'd prefer you didn't do it, you know, and Missouri certainly wasn't going to fight that. Now, there was some thought, I know probably in 13 cities in the SEC, when the stuff came up about Freeze in Alabama, I know every other fan base, because I thought it too, was, oh, well, Missouri's not going to buck the trend or buck the system and try to hire him against the SEC's objections, but Nick Saban doesn't care. Nick Saban's going to go hire him. I was actually kind of surprised that didn't happen. But I think it's pretty obvious that there was a, hey, let's please not bring this spectacle back into the league quite yet. It's also obvious from Missouri's perspective that there were a couple other guys in between Hugh Freeze and Derek Dooley somewhere. I mean, if you really want to believe that Missouri had this search that went on for a month and they interviewed these other guys and brought them to campus all as a charade and let's wait till the Cowboys season ends because we know we've got Derek Dooley in our hip pocket. That's probably a stretch I'm not willing to make, you know. So I think certainly a couple guys turned it down. And Dooley is – look, I don't know. It may work. If it does, it's going to end up looking pretty smart. But I think certainly the conventional thought is you just hired a quarterback's coach and an offensive coordinator who has never been either a quarterback's coach or an offensive coordinator.
It's funny, isn't it, that because Odom seems to me to be a really good guy. People like to play for him. I would assume people like to work for him. He appears to be a stand-up guy. They finished the season with some momentum, and yet he ends up with Dooley. It was an odd juxtaposition for me. I kind of struggled to sort of make sense of it.
I mean, I people have asked me, you know, what do you think people turned it down? And obviously I said yes, and the reason why is pretty simple. Because Barry Odom didn't do anything last year to prove that he is going to be here long term. What he did last year is enough to save his job, is enough to get another year or two to prove that he's the right guy. But he hasn't proven it yet. I mean, if Missouri goes out and goes 4-8 this year, like there's a chance he's gone at the end of this year. So he is still at this point kind of coaching for his job. So if an offensive coordinator looks at this situation, he's probably going to go, you know, like Glenn Ellerbe left Mizzou to be the offensive line coach at UCF with Josh Heupel, and nobody could really understand why he did it. Well, it's pretty simple. He knows Josh Heupel isn't getting fired for 4 years. I mean, there's no chance Josh Heupel's getting fired before 4 years from now. There's certainly a chance Barry Odom is. So you take the security. Assistant coaches do it all the time. Head coaches do it sometimes. I mean, Frank Haith did it here leaving Missouri for Tulsa. You know, but assistant coaches do it a lot. And like Odom may be the guy, but he hasn't proven it yet. And this year is going to have to be the year he proves that. If he can go out and win 8 games, then I think Missouri fans are finally going to say, okay, we know we've got our guy at least for the next 3 or 4 years. But you can't say that right now. I mean, if he goes out and goes 5-7, 6-6, it's going to be kind of like, well, I don't know. We may not fire him, but I'm not sure he's going to be here long term. And if he goes worse than 5-7, I think they probably fire him.
Took a break in our talk with Gabe to tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com, downtown Holly Springs, to check them out locally. But remember, you can just go online, fill out the form for Sildenafil or some other options there, and they will deliver to you wherever you are, 662-252-2321, TysonDrugs.com. Also, now the owners of G&M Pharmacy in Oxford deliver local in Oxford, and you get the same great service and hometown feel. Again, TysonDrugs.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're looking for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans. Great lease deals. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the properties and neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. And then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. And we're talking about Ole Miss and Missouri. Its tip-off is tonight at 8 at the Pavilion. And Rebel Nation, you should know 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to our interview with Gabe DeArmond on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Yeah, because, I mean, down record-wise, last year Missouri beat all the bad teams, lost all the good teams. I don't think they beat anybody with a winning record. And you look at this season coming up, I would assume you would really like to have a crystal ball on October the 14th because they're probably going to start 2-0. They got UT Martin, Wyoming, without Josh Allen. And then there's this weird stretch, not telling you anything, at Purdue, Georgia at home, at South Carolina, at Alabama. That thing could get squirrely pretty quick.
Absolutely. I mean, that game at Purdue, like, you got to win that game. I understand Purdue absolutely undressed Missouri last year, embarrassed. One of the five worst Missouri football performances I've ever seen. And I lived through, like, they were 1-10 when I was a kid, frequently, not just every now and again. But that's a game, like, you schedule a series with Purdue thinking you're getting wins. So you've got to go win that game if you're truly going to prove this is the next step. And, yeah, South Carolina, like Georgia and Alabama are the two I look at and say, every year I kind of go into it and say, what's best-case scenario, what's worst-case scenario? Absolute best-case scenario for Missouri is 10-2 and you lose to Georgia and Alabama. Because, look, they're decent. You know, they're a little better than Missouri, I think, on most Saturdays. So best-case scenario is 10-2, but that means you win every single swing game, which probably isn't likely. You know, you lose every single swing game. You're looking at 3-9. But Missouri is a place, and I think Ole Miss is like this too, and I know you guys would agree. I think we've talked about it before. Fans hate to hear it, but, like, Missouri is a place that if you win 7 games every year, you're never going to get 5. You can go 7-5 in perpetuity here. You know, fans would like to see more, obviously. But if he can go 7-5 with this schedule, he's going to be fine. I mean, the goal for Missouri football, I think, is pretty simple in the East. Like, Georgia's got this thing on lockdown for a while. They're the best program in this division. They're the best team in this division. Then Florida with Dan Mullen, like, okay. You know, to me, Florida and Tennessee are interesting. Like, they should be better than Missouri on a regular basis. But they haven't been since Missouri joined the league. So if I'm Missouri right now, I'm going, okay, maybe one of those two takes a leap. But our goal for the next few years is to keep the other one down and be consistently the third best program in this division. I mean, try to be better than South Carolina, and we should be better than Kentucky and Vandy. That should be the goal every year, is to be upper half of the East Division. If you do that often enough, you're going to have it. I mean, this is what Gary Pinkel did here when he was in the Big 12. He was just consistently pretty good, consistently an 8-win team, and then a few times broke through in 110, and then twice just had everything line up perfectly where he had this magical season where he was really close to playing for a national title. That's what you do here. You just win 7 every year, every now and then break through to 8 or 9, and then once every 6 or 7 years you hope everything lines up your way and you're going into the SEC title game really playing for something.
What's kind of the next step, or is it just kind of more of the same? I mean, obviously he comes back for his senior season. What's kind of next for Drew Locke in 2018?
Well, the reason Drew Locke is back is to show NFL scouts that he can do what the NFL wants him to do. The numbers, like, he's not – I'd be shocked if he put up the numbers he put up last year. I'd be shocked if Missouri put up the numbers he put up last year. And it's pretty interesting. At Dooley's press conference, he said something that was pretty enlightening. He said he once had a friend who was an offensive coordinator, and he put up these ridiculous video game numbers, threw the ball all over the field, all that. Then he became a head coach, and the offense was just nothing like what he'd been doing as an offensive coordinator. And Dooley said, how come you're not doing this? And he said, well, when I was an offensive coordinator, I was trying to get a head coaching job. Now that I'm a head coach, I'm trying to win games. That relates to Missouri in that offense last year was getting Josh Heupel a head coaching job. Like, Drew Locke was throwing 60-yard touchdowns against Idaho in a 30-point game in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was clearly, we're going to put up numbers, so at the end of the year, I can tell everybody I had a top-5 offense. And that probably sounds like I'm, like, taking a shot at Heupel, and I'm not. I mean, that's the point. He wants to be a head coach. Good for him. I don't have a problem with it. But I don't think you're going to see Missouri with, like, 127 plays a game and number 4 in the country in total yards this year. What the NFL wants to see out of Drew Locke is, can you make the throws we want you to make in this offense? Can you go under center? Can you do a little bit more stuff that the NFL asks you to do? Because nothing Missouri's offense did last year translates to the National Football League.
I ask this of almost everybody. We're a month away from – Ole Miss is either going to have to extend Andy Kennedy or make a move. You've covered the league for a little while. You know the landscape. When you look at the Ole Miss job as an outsider, but someone who knows a lot about college basketball, where does it stack up?
Boy, I mean, I think it's kind of, and the reason I can't fully answer this is only you guys probably know this. Like, how much do Ole Miss fans care about basketball? Because, like, to me, there's a decent percentage. Alabama, they're never going to care about basketball. Auburn, like, yeah, they're having a great year. Ultimately, Auburn, every Auburn fan would trade this for Gus Malzahn having beaten Georgia and gone to the playoff. Like, nobody basketball is never going to be super important. I think in the SEC, it's obviously hugely important at Kentucky. It's pretty important at Arkansas, Missouri, and maybe Tennessee. And then the rest, I think it's just kind of this thing you do between football and baseball season. So I don't know where Ole Miss really falls on that spectrum of how much they care. I think Ole Miss is probably like, I've got a hard time believing it's the top half of the SEC basketball job. I mean, I think Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri are all definitely better basketball jobs. I think Florida's definitely a better basketball job. After that, honestly, they're just all kind of in the same boat to me. There's nothing that really distinguishes one from the other.
They've tried to care. Baseball still a clear number two based on kind of everything we have to go on. They build the arena. The boosters don't care. They have no, I mean, just keeping it real, they have very little network to go in and get high-level AAU kids. So, no, I mean, it would be a stretch to push it anywhere above 12th in the SEC.
I mean, Ole Miss basketball is similar to what I was just saying about Missouri football. If you are an NIT team every year and, like, once every 4 years you make the NCAA tournament, you're probably not getting fired at Ole Miss, right? At least not for a while. I mean, isn't that basically what Andy Kennedy's done for 10 years?
He's made it twice in 11 years. So twice in four or five years. But he's done it recently. Yeah, he did it with Marshall Henderson the year that they beat Missouri in the quarters. And then they did it two years later. He went to the play-in game in Dayton. They won that game, and then they lost to Xavier in the first round or second, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Ole Miss, if they are making a change, their clear path is, like, look, you're not going and hiring a sitting Power 5 coach, right? Their clear path is find that next, you know, Shaka Smart type guy that hey, we're going to hire him before he's really good, but he's going to end up being really good for us, and then understand that if he is, he might be gone in a couple years. And you have to be okay with that. I mean, the hardest thing I think for any fan base to do is just to accept what their school or what their program is. But like you said, I mean, Ole Miss, I don't know. I think it's a better basketball job than Mississippi State. I personally think it's a better basketball job than Auburn, to be quite honest. I think Auburn's a terrible basketball job.
I do too.
Despite what Pearl is doing. I think LSU is actually a pretty good basketball job that just hasn't been good lately. But, yeah, I mean, Ole Miss is like in that 9th to 12th range.
I think the closest comp to me is Georgia. They're bigger, obviously, and right there with Atlanta. But as far as fans really caring, it's kind of Georgia-ish. And Ole Miss's problem right now is I don't know what the fan base expects being the same as what the administration expects. There appears to be kind of a gap or a difference there.
Yeah, and I think you've really got to hire a guy who is, like, okay with never being number one. Like, I always thought that when Rick Barnes was at Texas and really had it going, I thought somebody maybe had a chance to hire him away because he always knew, like, it doesn't matter what I do. If Mac Brown walks out and takes a leak at midcourt at halftime at one of our games, that's the story. Like, we could win the national title, and
that
Mac
would
Brown
be newsworthy.
Signing a third-string outside linewsworthy is a bigger story.
I mean, it would be newsworthy that the head football coach walked out to midcourt and urinated. That would be a story. I mean, I would write that.
Right. You get my – yes, I absolutely. But, okay, maybe a better time. If we're playing for the national title and Mac Brown just walks into the men's room and takes a leak like any other normal person, then that would have been the major story in all. But my point is you have to hire a guy who's okay never being number one. At Ole Miss, like, you have to hire a guy who probably kind of understands this isn't ever the biggest deal to these fans, no matter how good we are. Like, we're never going to be celebrated like like maybe if football were to, you know, like during the Eli years, or if baseball were to win a national title, like it's never going to be on that same level. I do think it takes a certain kind of coach to maybe be okay with that. Some coaches are far less okay with it.
Yeah, I don't know that here you'll ever be number two.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
I mean, I don't know. During the Marshall Henderson years, it seemed to me like they were pretty excited about it. But yeah, you guys would obviously know better than I would.
They were. They were excited about it.
They really show – I mean, like any place for the most part, they really show up when they win. But you've got to win at a pretty high level to get it consistently. And some of that is just the way the state is built up. I mean, you've got – like tonight, you got an 8 o'clock game on a Tuesday night.
It's going to rain.
And, you know, Ole Miss's top alumni bases are an hour and a half and 2.5 hours away. That's a long drive for an 8 o'clock tip getting home with kids the next day.
In the rain.
Hey, you know what? You just described Missouri football's problems, too. I mean, you know, yeah, if you win, they show up. But after one bad year, they quit showing up. And game's 2 hours away, and it's a lot of time. Do I really want to do that? You know, I often joke that if Missouri football offered to play every game in every fan's backyard and it wasn't during deer season and they were wearing the right uniforms and kickoff was at the right time, they'd sell out every game. But not being able to promise all those things, they struggled to sell out every game until they're winning 10 games a year. You know, it's in basketball, what we're seeing here is the opposite. Is like what we've seen this year is a fan base that's just been begging for a reason to care. I mean, I think the SEC is probably waking up and going, oh, hey, Missouri really cares about this stuff. Well, this is what Missouri basketball has always been. It just hasn't been for the last 4 years because they had no reason to care.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to change subjects. So if you got something on this, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you're probably going to ask about Missouri. I was going to ask completely opposite.
Yeah,
I was going to ask a Royal story question. You any hope at all that the Royals keep Moustakas and Hosmer, or is it over?
They're not keeping Moustakas. I guess the GM just went on the radio yesterday and basically said he never really has seemed all that interested in staying here. I think they have a decent chance to keep Hosmer, and I think they probably shouldn't. I'm going to be a little disappointed if they give him more than, you know, 5 years for $100 million, and I think they probably will. Doesn't make sense. When you're a small market team, you either go all in like they did in 2015, or you just completely start over. You can't do both things at once, and it seems like they're trying to do both things at once, and so might get, you know, 78 and 82 for a few years, which is whatever.
See, this is where baseball, the agents, they don't understand. They think that the fans are upset at the teams that go into rebuild mode. And fans are not upset at the teams that go into rebuild mode when they've seen the rebuild work. I mean, Kansas right. City built up that with that group. They got older. They went to two World Series. They won one. They have a title. And now it's obvious that, hey, we can't afford to keep all these guys. They're getting older. We need to get value for them. Maybe we need to go back into another cycle and build again. And if you're transparent with your fan base is okay with it. That's where Boris is.
Exactly.
Boris is wrong. This whole thing with the Major League Baseball Cold War, I'm convincing myself on a daily basis that this is all Scott Boris.
Well, and here's the thing, in all sports, right? Like the saying, good is the enemy of great. Like, it's my problem being a Chiefs fan my entire life. Like, I legitimately texted friends in the second quarter of the season opener this year. I said, oh, good, they're going to be 10-6, good enough to get in the playoffs and not good enough to do anything once they're there. Like, I'm tired of 10-6. I'll take 2-14 if it'll get me the guy that will eventually get me 14-2. Be really bad, like the Astros were, if it's going to pay off in really good. I'd much rather have the Astros last 10 years than, you know, I don't know, the Rangers last 10 years, who are, they're always like there, but they're never good enough to make it pay off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Cubs were awful for years, and then now they've been to 3 straight NLCSs, and they've won a World Series. The rebuilds work. The Cubs rebuilt, yeah. Won a title. The Astros rebuilt, won a title. Fans see that, and they go, okay, I'm good. I'm in. Now, then I didn't feel like the Marlins, where you're just lying to them. That's the other part. You have to be transparent. You have to say, here's what we're doing. This is the plan. We're going to talk about it. You can't do the Derek Jeter thing where you're like, no, we're trading Stanton because we just – We want to. We're trading Ozuna because we want to. You have to be honest.
Yeah, Stanton's just not good enough.
Yeah, he's not. Some of those home runs.
Can't win a title with that guy.
No. I mean, you know, but they're the exception. For the most part, everybody else in baseball's cool. If you're a White Sox fan today, you're starting to see it. Like, oh, this, you know what? Kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm all in on tanking. The Royals should run out of – I want to be like the guy in Major League next year. Like, who are these effing guys, you know? That's the team I want to see.
I saw a couple weeks ago you quote tweeted the story I'd written about Ole Miss's baseball expansion, and even at this point Kentucky's putting like $40 million into something, and it's gotten really stupid for a lot of sports that I mean a lot of schools that don't make money on baseball. I mean, Ole Miss is kind of right there on the border, and I guess being on the border is better than losing $5 million. But is Missouri trying to play this game, or do they just is this the one sport because of everything around them where they just kind of throw their hands up and go, hey, it is what it is?
I think that's absolutely what Missouri should do. I mean, the thing about Ole Miss's baseball stadium, like Missouri is putting turf. They put turf down, but they only did it on the infield. They had to raise like $2 million. And from what I hear, they kind of had to go around and piecemeal that for baseball. No, this is not a sport Missouri can consistently compete in the league. Like we were talking about, 10 of the 14 SEC schools care about more about baseball than they do about basketball. Like, Missouri baseball is – even when Tim Jamison had it going in the Big 12, they had a run of Aaron Crow, Max Scherzer, and Kyle Gibson, who were all, first-round draft choices as pitchers. Like, they didn't really sell out. The administration never really committed. It's just not – it's not a sport I can see Missouri ever competing in this league. If you are Missouri, like, if you can finish middle of the pack and get to the NCAA tournament once every 2 or 3 years. Like, I think that's really successful in baseball. It's why, like we were talking about coaches, this is a really tough job. Steve Beezer, a lot of people like him, think he's the right guy here. You know, if you do well here, are you really going to stay here is what I wonder. And, I understand there's a pocket of fans that it makes really mad. It's kind of like, the people who really like women's basketball or really like wrestling or whatever, like I don't say it as an insult to those sports. They just don't move the needle. Baseball, like that's all well and good, but I don't think Missouri should really commit a whole lot to it because I don't think their chances of ever being very good at it in this league are high.
Is it weather or is it because everybody's such strong Cardinals and Royals fans?
I think a lot of it is, yes, this is a pro baseball state. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, in April, would I rather spend, $30 in a few hours to go see a Royals or a Cardinals game or spend $5 and go see a Mizzou game? I mean, college baseball isn't something that – I'll be honest, guys, I don't like it. I think it's a bad sport. It's poor quality. I don't enjoy watching it. I've grown up watching
BP
Major League
right
Baseball.
All right.
And the reason I've always compared it to junior college basketball, like the best players aren't here. The best players are in the minor leagues. So like nobody's a huge fan of D2 or junior college basketball. To me, that's what college baseball is.
I think the pitching is good. I think what makes it for what you're talking about and keeping on that realm, I think defensive issues are what cause that a lot of times. In my opinion,
yeah, I think like the defense is a little 11 with 7 errors.
Yeah, well, and yeah, I mean that's. I see what you're saying. I mean, I'm different. I'm a weird dude, but I understand completely. What you hit on though is in this state, with Ole Miss and State doing like the care. This is kind of. I mean, obviously they're Braves and Cardinals fans and Cubs fans and whatever, but these are kind of their pro baseball teams, if that makes sense. That's such a different thing than Missouri because we don't have a lot of pro sports around us for in a geographic stretch for 5-6 hours. So, anyway.
Yeah, and it's the problem. I mean, it's like Nebraska football, Alabama football. Like that's the state's pro team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting dynamic and. It's something that I think does hurt Missouri overall. I mean, if you're a football fan in this state, you're a Chiefs fan. If you're a baseball fan, you're a Cardinals fan. Now there's not an NBA team here, which is maybe why Mizzou basketball is maybe why Missouri cares more about basketball than a lot of other places do.
last thing, if you had to pick, is Missouri playing in a Saturday or Sunday in that first weekend of the NCAA tournament?
First weekend, yes, because I still am. I perpetuate my own unhappiness. I still think Michael Porter plays at some point this year, and I think they at least win a game in the tournament.
Oh, so you do think Porter plays? That's fascinating.
I think he's going to play at some point. I have no idea when it is, but yeah, they're in the mix for something. I think he's going to play at some point. Not as soon as people have hoped, but I do think he's on the court at some point.
That'll be a hell of a story.
It will. I mean, and we all know what they're going to do is trot him out in some road game that only like two people go travel to cover, right? So that's going to be his debut, is like in, I don't know, Baton Rouge.
All right, Gabe. Thanks so Nobody much for the know. Time. We'll talk to you soon. I'll send you some stuff tonight after the game.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Later, Gabe. Thanks to Gabe for joining us for an extended period of time today. The podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Sedo County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also, a condo financing leader in Oxford and the float-down option. So if the rates go down after you close, you get that lower rate, 662-234-2704 or JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB is offering 1-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, 3-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that 3-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's 3-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
A lot of reporters going to the Olympics to start their coverage. 15 hours, the flight time.
Oof.
It's a long time on a plane.
That is a long time on a flight. Like, because I've made the flight to the West Coast several times, where it's 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Flew San Francisco to Tampa once after running the Big Sur Marathon.
Ooh, San Francisco to Tampa. That's a good ways.
Oh. That was miserable. I can't imagine. That was a 6-hour flight, so that's doing that flight again and then half of another one. No thanks.
Wow. Yeah. I've never done that anyway. Just anything else you want to beat up before I move on in the show? Any other issues today?
No, I've probably done enough damage for a day.
Nothing else you're mad about?
Oh.
Well, that's not the right answer.
I've had my moments. I've already
didn't go to Twitter with it.
No, dies on Twitter too fast.
Oh, you needed sustainability.
I went to Facebook.
You did.
You want to make a statement? You go to Facebook. Twitter's fun. Facebook, you can get real.
Okay. The interaction on Facebook continues aggressively.
From what I can tell on Facebook, I'm having an impact.
Are you?
I think I have motivated people. This okay. morning, so you know, I was driving. I took Carson to school at OIS, and so I'm coming back so that I can do this podcast with you at least one more time, and I'm on, I guess, was that North Lamar?
Yeah, that would be North Lamar.
I'm headed back here. Mm-hmm. And as you know, North Lamar and Industrial Road intersect, and off to my left in this case is the industrial part. And every morning this area has turned into Daytona International Speedway because the people are late to their work, and at Winchester and at the other plants. I guess there's a Caterpillar plant or whatever. And this morning, I'm going probably 45 to 50. I'm probably going above the speed limit on North Lamar heading home. And there's a white station wagon-ish sort of vehicle, double line, passing me, literally going to get somebody killed. So I called 911.
Oh, you called 911?
I did. Because I've called the county over and over and over, and the county doesn't care. And I said what I've said all along, which is these people, this happens every morning, and they're going to get somebody killed, and you know how that works. It's going to end up being some innocent kid who gets killed, because that's the way these things work. And it's preventable if the sheriff's department would do something about it. And so if you want to get mad at me, sheriff's department, you can. But you could sit out here on Industrial Road and on North Lamar every single morning.
You could fill some quotas.
You could fill your quotas so fast. You would fill them so fast. And you would make money. County would make money. You'd get your quotas. You'd do your jobs. You'd make the road safer. And these people would be late to work, which would get them reprimanded and or fired. And you'd get results. But for whatever reason, and I don't know, maybe it's because it's an elected office, that doesn't happen. And Frank, you know, we talk about conspiracies. I've hit the point where I suspect a conspiracy, because it's nonsensical that it is allowed to happen. There was a fatality right out here. Was it a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Was it?
Yeah. You know, because late in the afternoon, if you're driving on Industrial, the sun is bad.
Yeah.
And there's hills and stuff, and it just terrifies me. I used to run out there. I don't run anymore. Out of control.
What do you think the line is tonight?
I will say Mizzou is a 6-point favorite.
You're pretty far off. It opened at Ole Miss. Let's see. Hold on a second. It's actually flipped a little. Currently, Ole Miss -1.5. Ole Miss favored by 1.5.
I mean, Ole Miss has been pretty good on its home court. They're what, 4-1 in the 3-1, 4-1 in the league at home.
55% of the money is on Mizzou +1.5 to 45%. The total is 145, so they're expecting a game in the low 70s ish.
Yeah, that's about right.
68% of the money is on the over in that, and Oddshark.com predicts a final score of 74-69 Tigers. So
that's about what I would go with. I mean, I'm not betting on this game, no way in hell. But if you made me bet, you're gonna give me Missouri and points. I'd take Missouri.
I mean, you only get 1 point, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, in a game that could be close, they have more to play for right now. That's part of Ole Miss's problem, is that now you have to motivate guys to go play hard.
Yeah. So.
And I don't. You know. The whole "I'm going to take your scholarship away" with older kids, that doesn't resonate. They're done anyway. And with some of the other guys, they're like, "Well, are you going to be here?" It's the problem when you let these things percolate. Everybody goes, "Well, the kids don't know." Of course, the kids know.
So
it's the problem when you allow the off season to turn into tournament or bust. It was. Poorly handled on so many levels, and here we are reaping what was sown.
Yeah, getting into early February and the like. So, all right, we will come back tomorrow, and got a couple things potentially lined up for the next couple days, so we'll get you some of that on the podcast. Then have our normal guest as well. Check rebelgrove.com. Signing day a day away. I did not think about that. I guess no show tomorrow morning. Really kind of forgot. Are we doing one? We're not doing one? What are we doing?
I don't know. We hadn't decided.
And you kind of asked Russell what's going on. I don't know the answer to that. So we'll let you know.
Matt Luke has a press conference tomorrow at 2.
Yeah, that's not.
We'll obviously have recruiting coverage. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Anyway, we'll let you know. But signing day tomorrow, so we'll talk to you plenty the rest of the week. And have a good day.